The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome. Representative Greenlick, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3024. Welcome to the House Education Committee. If you have with you a cell phone, please take it out of your purse or pocket or backpack or jacket and make it not make that sound. Turn it all the way to off, not just to vibrate, but all the way to off, so that everyone in internet land can hear what's happening today. Pardon? You did. Representative Greenlick always sets a good example, and that's why he's going to kick us off today. But hopefully you won't kick us, because that would hurt. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, and I'm delighted to be here to talk on behalf of House Bill 3024 as a warm-up act for the two presidents of the universities that are subject to Bill 3024. I want to start by saying I've been involved with these two universities both since about 1964. I was an adjunct professor at Portland State for about 30 years and taught a class a semester during that time, mostly on a pro bono basis, and taught in both the School of Social Work and the Department of Sociology and in a variety of other places. I helped create the first PhD program at Portland State, got the federal funding for that program, and then ended up spending 10 years as chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine at the medical school at OHSU. I worked over that career for creating joint programs between those schools and other schools, and I love both those institutions. I think they're both absolutely critical institutions in the state of Oregon, and do everything possible to support them here and outside of the building. When I was sitting in an economics discussion about the future of the state of Oregon, and particularly the Portland metropolitan region, the economist who was giving the presentation was pointing out barriers to economic development in the Portland metropolitan area. And one of the key barriers that he pointed out was that there was not a major research university in the metropolitan area that ranked in the international rankings of those kinds of universities in the top 500. And I sat there thinking, gee, I know how to create a university instantly if we really want to have a major research university in the metro area, and that's by combining Portland State and Oregon Health Sciences University. And this was 6 or 7 years ago. And I began thinking about it at that point, not in terms of how to create a ranking, but in terms of how to create a major research university. And it became clear to me that there was only one feasible way to do it, and that was by integrating and ultimately merging Portland State and Oregon Health Sciences University into a single institution over time. That this would create both the rankings that would move this combined university in the top 100 in the world, but more importantly, it would create a set of educational synergies that would become unsurpassed. I had helped create the Masters of Public Health program at Oregon State, Portland State, and OHSU. And there was about half a school of public health at PSU and half a school of public health at OHSU, and that if those were a single institution, a school of public health would emerge in a way that would be basically seamless. There are engineering programs at both places that combined would be amazing. The School of Business at PSU could be a driving force in terms of commercializing the intellectual property that emerges from the two schools as they were combined. The science education could be an extraordinary thing. All of a sudden, it came to me that this is about education and about the future. I did my undergraduate and graduate work at Wayne State University in Detroit and the University of Michigan, and I just sort of grew up assuming there was a medical school as a part of a university because of my experience in both those places, and I looked around at Washington and UCLA, and most other major universities, Stanford, Harvard, Yale, you go through them all, there are medical schools in conjunction with the scientific effort. So I began to deal with House Bill 3024 with a very simple notion and a very simple mechanism for getting to what I think is the inevitable. I think inevitably these two institutions are going to be a single institution. So the question is, how do you create a pathway that was simple and straightforward and systematic that would ultimately move into an integrated university? And the proposal you see in front of you removes Portland State University from the Oregon University system for fiscal matters. For academic matters, the schools, including OHSU, still integrate their academic programs. For fiscal matters, it would move PSU out of the state system, and it would expand the public corporation board that currently runs OHSU, and it would put PSU under that board, under the expanded public institution board, and have that board run the two institutions as parallel institutions, and give that board a decade to integrate the two into one, or to reject that idea and keep them as two and separate them. But it would give them 10 years after that happened, which would take a couple of years, to create a single integrated university. And basically the proposal is that straightforward. I hope we can move forward with this year. I'd love to see it out of here and passing both floors of the House and the Senate and going to the governor. Failing that, I hope this is the time that we can begin to take a very serious move towards this, perhaps in the next interim, using this committee or other committees. And I intend, once I've straightened out the healthcare system in this session, to move my energies in the interim to straighten out the question of creating a major research university in the Portland metropolitan area. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions for Representative Greenlake? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, when I first came to the state, there was a university with a hospital. I think it was the University of Oregon and the University of Oregon Hospital. And then
a university with a medical school.
Medical school, that's right. And the medical school. And then that eventually, through this process, actually, they separated the University of Oregon from the university hospital, and they made this private corporation, in large part, in my opinion, to reduce the cost of higher education to the state. And through exceptional work by the OHSU, they've maintained with less and less support from the state. I worry that in your model, all that would do for PSU is relieve the state in their belief that they should continue to contribute money to them, and they would have to become more and more creative like OHSU has, to, I think, the state's detriment. I think we have underfunded OHSU extremely badly in the last number of years, and I worry that this process might do the same thing to PSU and starve them both. Any comments about that?
Yeah, first, let me put history.
Yeah,
let me just
I think that's
go back.
Good.
There was the University of Oregon Medical School and dental and nursing at the health sciences in Portland as a part of the University of Oregon. The next step was to separate that and create another public university.
Okay.
So the next step was to create Oregon Health Sciences University because the 100-mile distance between the two places didn't make a lot of sense. So we created another public university in the system of in the Oregon University system. Then the move was to take OHSU out of OUS and create a public corporation of it with a board, and to keep the education coordination together. There are a lot of myths about what that deal was. I was around what that deal was, and the deal was not to stop the state from supporting OHSU. The deal was that the university would not ask for any increase in the budget over the next two biennia.
We met that goal.
But would after that, because it felt it would have enough enough savings from not being structured inside the OUS fiscal systems. I believe we do not fund any of our universities. I've had the thrill of voting against the university budget, the higher ed budget, in every session I've been here, because I think it's been inadequate and it continues to be inadequate. I think what we need is a new mechanism for funding students in Oregon, and I have had a proposal to move the funding to funding of states' students getting their education based on the true cost of that education at the various universities. And I think this is an absolute critical matter before we move forward with this, is to have a proper funding formula, if not enough money, but at least a proper formula that will keep the education component and any other special components of these universities properly funded.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gilster. Representative Greenlick, in listening to this and reading through this, it's, for me, it's not just about the money, it's about the system. And if we're talking about Portland State and Oregon Health Sciences University combining, makes a lot of sense to me, they're in the same area. Why should we not do that for some of our others, like Western, Corvallis, Eugene, and not have an OUS?
Madam Chair, I think we need a transformation of the university system generally, and I think this would be step one. And one of the things that makes OUS nervous is that this will catalyze some other movements around the system. And I say, yeah, but I think it is time for a strategic look at the university system. And at least I believe that if we're going to starve at least the major universities, we ought to free them up from the OUS, and I'd be happy to work on that with you and to advocate it. I think we need to protect the regionals a lot, and I think they're very important to the state, and I think we need to look at this in a systematic way. It's my understanding that the Strategic Planning Committee of OUS has been beginning to think about how these things work, and I think it's clear a decade from now the world is going to look very different in terms of, but I hope what we haven't done in the meantime is kill any of these institutions, because I think we definitely need them.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Dr. Representative Greenlee, for bringing this here.
Professor.
Professor. I think this is a big win for academia in this state and for the metropolitan area and for all future students that can come to either one of these institutions if we put them together. I'd be real interested in hearing other testimony of other folks here, but I think it's fantastic. It would just, in my mind, based on the experience I've had at other universities around the country, be a huge boon to the vitality of each of the institutions. And darn, you're just a visionary in another area, too.
There you go. I also, thank you, sir, and as a last comment, I think I heard Representative Roblin say that moving things to rules to keep them alive is a really good idea. Maybe that's not what I heard.
Nah,
but
it was
amazing how in conversations we can all hear slightly different things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative Greenlick? Nope. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next, Joe Robertson and Vim Vival, please.
Good afternoon. Joe and I flipped a coin, and he asked that I go first as a result of the coin. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vim Vival. I'm the president of Portland State University. It is my third time this spring to have the opportunity to talk to you, and I appreciate that opportunity. I appreciate all your hard work.
And we especially appreciate you in person. You're great on the phone, but it's great to have you here in person.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. I also appreciate, in the short time that I've been in Oregon, I've come to appreciate Representative Greenlick and clearly his commitment to higher education in the state, and his commitment and dedication to trying to figure out how to do that in the best way possible. Let me start out by saying that unlike in past sessions, PSU has not taken a position on this bill. To the fundamental question that's at hand in this bill, my answer is that I don't know if merging PSU and OHSU is a good idea. I don't know that it isn't, but I'm open to the discussion. Some of my openness to this discussion is the result of my personal experience. For 25 years, I was at the University of Illinois at Chicago. University of Illinois at Chicago is the result of a merger between University of Illinois Chicago Circle and the University of Illinois at the Medical Center. University of Illinois Chicago Circle, which was one of the two predecessor institutions, has a history exactly like Portland State. It was started in 1946 by the Illinois Higher Ed System to serve returning veterans. It was actually started at Navy Pier. Navy Pier never flooded, unlike Vanport, but it was very similar in Chicago. It moved to a location just outside of the downtown in the mid-60s in an urban renewal area. And it was only a mile away from the University of Illinois Medical Center, which was a separate branch of the University of Illinois system. And over the years, discussions began about the possibility of merging them. That merger finally happened on September 1, 1982. And it did create, out of two separate institutions, what was then a Class 1 Carnegie Research Institution, which was the highest rank of institutions. And that institution now ranks, I think, 46th in the nation, as ranked by things like external research funding. That's a case where a merger, even though they usually said it did leave some blood on the street, there were some faculty on both sides of the merger who were not happy and who left, benefiting some of the other institutions in the state. On the whole, I think it's considered to have been a success. However, that has not been the case in all such instances. In 2007, the Oregon University System, as you know, commissioned a report entitled Considering the Possibility of Merging Oregon Health and Sciences University and Portland State University. And I think you all have a copy of that, or it's been given to you. And that report points to an example of a merger that hasn't been met with the same success that I saw at UIC. It specifically talks about the acquisition of the Hahnemann Medical College and the Medical College of Pennsylvania by Drexel University in Philadelphia, where, according to the report, the units are still working at cross purposes because questions about the merger were not addressed in advance of a forced action. And there's other literature that can give support that it can work, it can also not work. A lot depends on how it's done, when it's done, under the right circumstances, with what level of funding, and so on. Indeed, it identifies these obstacles. Nevertheless, the prospect of merging the two institutions has a certain amount of intrigue. And the study actually concluded that given enough time and careful perseverance, the combining of OHSU and PSU just might work, benefiting the two institutions, the Portland area and the state of Oregon. According to the report, this would create a middle-sized university compared to its peers. It would, of course, be the largest institution in Oregon. It would enable the position to capitalize on OHSU's reputation as a center for sponsored research and PSU's capacity both for teaching and for developing new research programs. Finally, the report highlights that the way a merger is executed can make or break success. If it's going to be more than the sum of its parts, or at worst, less than the sum of its parts, there must be supportive leadership, guarantees of state funding, and an institutional commitment, that means a broadly shared commitment to the merger. So clearly there's a lot of room for debate on this issue, and we're willing to talk about it. Let me just take a minute, though, to talk about the current and planned collaboration between our institutions that already exist, because I believe that many of the benefits of a merger would consist of faculty working together, researchers working together. And I think our institutions have been finding ways and are continuing to find new ways to actually garner those benefits even in the current structural situation. We actually provided a 6-page document that put together detail on many of the collaborations between our institutions. Let me just give you a few examples. In teaching, we have several shared degree programs, the Master of Public Health already mentioned, as well as an MBA program with a focus on health issues. We do a lot of research together, about $4 million worth in ongoing research grants right now with investigators from both of our institutions. And on the administrative side, we collaborate on issues related to telecommunications and technology, as well as in planning for the region where we're located. Tomorrow, in fact, I'll be back down here to testify in front of the Education Ways and Means Subcommittee about a future collaboration that we are very excited about, the South Waterfront Life Sciences proposal, which would combine the science capacities of Portland State, OHSU, Oregon State, University of Oregon, and the Oregon Institute of Technology at a new facility in the, on the South Waterfront. It would have about 100,000 square feet for education programs, almost all of which would actually be shared. It wouldn't be, you know, we have square footage and OHSU has square footage and U of O has square footage. No, it would be square footage and we would use it as needed. In addition to that, it would include 100,000 square feet for research and private industry. It would serve the community with a business incubator where established companies can come to solve current problems, collaborate with our faculty and students, and prepare for the future. And it would help establish Oregon as a center of high-tech and biotech innovation. So it's an example of the kind of things that can be done even with the existing structures. But in terms of the issue of merging the two institutions, if the committee would like, BSU and OHSU would be very happy to set up a committee to study this notion and to look at all the ways in which we can collaborate both administratively and academically and what it would entail to do this with success. So I look forward to your questions and further discussion, but no matter what happens, I pledge that we will continue to collaborate very proactively with the Oregon Health Science University. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll hear from Dr. Robertson first before we...
Okay, great. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Joe Robertson, President of Oregon Health and Science University. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And I would just like to begin by saying that I don't think any committee will have three people testify before it that are more unified in their ultimate purpose and mission. I think we have yet to delineate the exact means by which that might be accomplished, but I think we are absolutely all in agreement that if the closer these two universities work together and the more we can enhance higher education in Portland, the better that will be not only for the institutions but for the city and for the region. And just for the record, on behalf of OHSU, we applaud that goal and understand that that goal is clearly the heart of HB 3024. The bill's chief sponsor, Representative Greenlich, is a very good friend of OHSU, a member of our faculty, and was one of the driving forces in establishing the degree program that he mentioned. He really was just paramount importance, that joint master's degree in public health with PSU and OSU, a program that is highly respected nationally, and I think is a real flagship-type program for the type of accomplishment that can be obtained when institutions work together. But that is just one way OHSU and PSU work together, and we have President Wiebel given you the list and outlined some of that, and our list of collaborations is extensive. In addition to those projects that are listed, I want everyone to realize that collectively we have charged our respective provost and chief financial officers to meet with their counterparts regularly to explore opportunities for additional collaboration. So this is not a passive process. We are out there and are actively seeking new opportunities. Given our track record of collaboration and building on the current structure involving our provost and CFOs, we would like to see a committee formed by the institutions to study this process. The committee would represent all stakeholders to the process and have robust faculty participation, faculty being key to the success of both institutions and hence vital to the prospects for further collaboration regarding a merger. And I want to return to the aspect of the faculty a little later in my comments. The report that has previously been referenced is it is comprehensive. There's a lot of very good material in there. It is not conclusive. It states that there are both potential advantages and potential disadvantages, but I think it would be a great starting place and a great resource material for such a committee. It is important to realize that chief among the obstacles that were mentioned there was the difference in mission, OHSU having a relative narrow mission of health and research organized around professional schools, hospitals, and clinic, and a corporate board. Portland State, by contrast, has a broad mission focused on a large student population and a wide-ranging undergraduate course of study. As was mentioned, if you look around the country, there is a very mixed review. Some of these mergers have been successful, some have not. If you look for excellence in academic health centers, you can find it in large university systems, or you can find it in standalone institutions. If we look to the north, we look at the University of Washington, that medical school and the surrounding complex, and it is fully embedded in a institution that's part of a state board of higher education. If we look to the south and contrast this with UCSF, it is a standalone academic health center, also immensely successful. If you look at what distinguishes both institutions, it is a long history of substantial and consistent public funding. So I contend that it is the history of funding rather than the exact organizational structure. If the structure in some way reflects the commitment or in some way can be used to enhance the commitment, then of course it's a great advantage. But if you look, for instance, with regard to the School of Medicine, the University of Washington obtains roughly seven times the amount of funding as OHSU, and UCSF 11 to 12 times, a full order of magnitude difference. So I think that's one of the factors that has to be carefully considered as we set our expectations. Besides the funding, the other point that I really want to bring out is that I think any such effort will fail if it is not endorsed by the faculty. As we sit here before you, we are the quote, we are the proverbial leaders of these institutions, but I don't know how President Vival feels, but I know that I gave up the illusion of control a long time ago, and my aspiration is for influence.
I've only been here 9 months.
And at this moment in history, we are sitting at a rather perilous time with regard to the retention of our faculty. And I think the last thing that we want to do is appear heavy-handed and appear that we have the solution for them. The faculty that we have do feel that they're under duress. They do feel that they are underfunded. They have been steadfast. They have been faithful. And anything that we do, this is of paramount importance, must be perceived by them as something that will facilitate their ability to achieve, you know, the goals that they've chosen to pursue in academia. That's why it's so essential that we would get their buy-in at the beginning. In the report from the Learning Alliance, there's an interesting story and analogy in the prologue, and it relates to how OHSU came to be in its current location on Markham Hill. And if you don't know the story, the land was purchased sight unseen as a location for a railroad turning station. The purchase was made by a railroad company based in New York after reading a map that showed the location close to downtown and the Willamette River. As you might guess, the map did not include topographical information. Now, why do I mention this? And this is why it was brought out in the report. The lessons are two. Plans concocted from afar and on paper become wondrously implausible when imposed on unfriendly terrain. And great achievement can result from even the most befuddled beginnings. So, again, I think the key elements, I think everyone here is united in what we ultimately want to happen, I don't think. I mean, we want to enhance higher education in Portland. But if this effort is going to be successful, I think it has to result in enhanced funding, and it has to have faculty involved as primary drivers at the very beginning. Again, I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Representative Van Orman.
Well, at the bottom of your statement that you gave to us, you say you want to reiterate your request that the legislature delay consideration so that the affected parties study the issue more closely. Is that your recommendation?
That would be my recommendation, and it's driven primarily by this concern of the fact. I am very, very concerned. If there is lots to worry about trying to influence at a large educational institution at this particular time, but the one thing I think more about in the wee hours of the night than anything else, it's about how we're going to retain the faculty. If that spiral of faculty flight starts, and we are, in all honesty, and this is not hyperbole, and I have never said this before, but we are perilously close to this point, and we must not do anything that dashes hope.
Representative Revlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is Representative Greenlick still on the faculty?
I presume so.
Yeah.
To the last time I checked. I mean,
so 100% of your faculty here have already indicated their total.
Yes, please, Representative Greenlick.
Professor
Greenlick.
I really do want to concur with both of the statements they made, and I would be delighted to hold this off and to work with the two universities in creating a committee, which I would hope also will include community members, because it's very clear the report said without community support this mm-hmm. wouldn't go, and I would mm-hmm. be delighted to have you just hold off on action on this, and I can work with these two gentlemen in the interim to move forward.
Representative Revlin.
Yeah, thank you for the follow-up. And I guess the big thing, I really agree with all of this, because I think we need, Representative Greenlick and I have talked about this a lot, we do need a major university. I had the good fortune to go to the University of Washington as an undergraduate. I understand how that synergy can happen in an organization when you have it. But we do need to do what Washington and the others that have been successful, and that is truly fund these places. So in any discussion, I think we have to be clear about how the state has to stay involved. And I think Representative Greenlick's other issue with regard to appropriate funding by students or however we want to do that has to be a part of the conversation. Because I don't know. I'm pleased that we have a system that is doing as well as it is, considering how little we have chosen to fund it, and we've had that conversation as well. So make sure in that conversation, if there's any I can do for help, I will be there to make sure that we really identify what it takes if we're going to try to get that university, and it will take some help from the state.
Representative Bimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it, you know, as the report says, this is an intriguing prospect, and you know, just the vision of a university of this scope as an engine for Portland and the region is really intriguing, and I really encourage you to pursue the conversations around this. Having myself been part of a number of faculty studies, though they can tend to go on a bit, and so
And like legislative studies?
Well, they're in a whole other realm.
The leisure of the theory class.
So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about a potential timeline for this work, and you know, how long it would take for you to be able to put together a preliminary set of recommendations, either president.
Well, less than the 10 years that that was envisioned in my mind. I think this is a serious issue, but I think thinking about a 12-month time frame to do a study would make sense. We, Joe and I, haven't really discussed that in detail. But.
Okay, so you're on the fast track then.
That's light speed. Nowadays, yeah, glacial speed, but that doesn't have the same meaning now with global warming as it used to.
And if I could follow up, you know, the issue of the difference in the missions between the two schools, while, you know, that can create impediments, I think it can also facilitate merger, just in my experience, because you at least don't have different philosophies in your mission. They're rather complementary. And so, you know, I think there is a potential for a match there between the two institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just such an honor to have the three of you here, folks who are so dedicated to education and science and health in this state. And I have to trot out my mantra that I haven't used for a while on this committee, but what are we, a third world state? Your comments, Dr. Robertson, about the support of education in our state compared with Washington to the north, California to the south, are so germane to everything we're doing right now. And in my professional life, as opposed to this amateur life that I have right here before us, I deal with those institutions, you know, of. And while the faculty there are also under duress, it's nothing like the situation at OHSU that would be resolved greatly if we could help out more with funding than we have been able to do so far. And so challenge us moving forward to really try to resolve this, whether it's through additional state funds or letting students pay more, not letting them, but dealing with the way in which student tuition is paid, et cetera. We've really got to help out more. So thank you very much for being here.
And thank you all very much for being here. Representative Greenlick, thank you for bringing the discussion, and I look forward to continuing it in the months to come. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3024. Colleagues, we're going to go out of order on the rest of our agenda. This will surprise you, but we do not have all of the fiscal statements for the bills that we were hoping to move today. So I thought we'd start with what we can move. So if you start on the back, I would open a work session on House Bill 3076. This is the bill that requires a school district to submit a written plan of instruction for TAG students to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. You have in your pile, probably towards the back of your pile, the fiscal statements, and I would... Do we have a letter from the speaker that would let us remove the... There is no ways and means. It says right here it has... Oh, that's the next one. Great. So I would entertain a motion to the floor.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3076 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Dimbrough moves House Bill 3076 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Pump.
Madam Chair, I know that we had a little bit of discussion that this really isn't... a lot of school districts are doing this, but just for on the record that if this is another mandate, we continue to hear from school districts that, gosh, don't do any more mandates. And yet, I think this is something that is valuable to happen. But anyway, just... It's the whole mandate word.
Right.
It's another M word.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Any further discussion? Representative Reblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This mandate really only requires a stamp, however.
Yeah.
They already are required to do the plan. It's just sending it in.
I know.
Haven't required. So this is one of those smaller mandates that I think is an appropriate one. If we're going to make them do the report, it would be good that something happened to the report. So I'm in favor of this one.
Representative Springer.
I think Representatives Comp and Roblin have captured the essence. Districts are already required to fill out the report. They're just not required to send the report.
Yeah. And the amendment requiring universal health care for all people paid for by local school districts, that was fine?
That was fine. Also. That was a little that was a little amendment. We like that.
I'll take the town with the vote.
That was a simple amendment.
Representative Benjamin, did you have further discussion on
that? Well, no. I only that I am concerned that, but Representative Roblin has cleared up the issue on this one, but I have to share Representative Comp's concern about these unfunded mandates, because my concern is that we may impose, but there's no guarantee that they will dispose.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll? Mm-hmm.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Comp? Aye. Representative Mellor? Aye. Representative Roblin? Aye. Representative Thatcher? Aye. Representative Van Ormen? Aye. Vice Chair Springer? Aye. Vice Chair Dimbro? Aye. Representative Van Ormen?
Yes.
Representative Van Ormen, did I already call you?
Yes.
I said aye.
Yes.
Thanks. And Chair
Gilson. Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Who would like to carry the bill? Representative Thatcher, would you like to carry the bill?
I do.
Right, so Representative Thatcher will carry, and I will close the work session on House Bill 3076. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2851. And colleagues, this is the bill that Representative Brune brought to us. Not creating an alternative tuition system, but creating a task force to look at creative ways for funding tuition. And the fiscal statement is also in your packet here.
Chair Gelso, this does have a subsequent referral to Ways
and Means. And I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2851 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Dimbro moves that House Bill 2851 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill has received the required majority and is moving on to Ways and Means. So next, if we flip back over to the front, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2830. Colleagues, House Bill 2830 is a bill, one of the first ones we heard this session, brought to us by Representative Beyer. And this bill created the Task Force on School Computers and Digital Technology. The fiscal and revenue packets are in your files. And
I believe this is
Madam Chair, House Bill
2380. Yes, sorry.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And I would accept a motion. And this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2380 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Dimbro moves House Bill 2380 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher.
I think I stated my objections before. I'm not sure if this is, it's a slam dunk that this is a good use of taxpayer money, and if you did think it was a good use of taxpayer money, there are plenty of programs out there that would provide those computers. I'm just not sure if the academic outcomes are there. There's a number of places that have adopted this laptop programs for their schools, and they're phasing them out simply because they're either not showing the results or they're becoming an actual hindrance. So I will be a no.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we just, I'm looking here, passing out potentially our second or third task force, and I know this is a conversation that we had just yesterday. that we'd be aware of how many task forces, and it feels like a lot. I don't think it's that many, and certainly we've all heard the sponge analogy over the last several weeks. So anyway, I would just, I guess, remind us of that.
Thank you, Representative Springer. And are there any further comments? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Harkness. Aye. Representative Pelton. Aye. Representative Pelton. Aye. Representative Mallers. Aye. Representative Roblin. Aye. Representative Thatcher. No. Representative Van Orman. Aye. Vice Chair Springer. Aye. Vice Chair Denbrough. Aye. And Chair Gilbert. Aye.
Having seen the required received the required votes, the bill is moved to the Ways and Means Committee. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2380 and open a work session on House Bill 3331. Representative Denbrough.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3331 be moved without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Denbrough moves that House Bill 3331 be moved without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3331 is moved to Rules, and I will close the work session on House Bill 3331. I will open a work session on House Bill 2756. We don't have a fiscal, so I will hold this open until Friday. Close a work session on House Bill 2756 that is held over until Friday. And open a work session on House Bill 2586. We do not have a fiscal on House Bill 2586, so I will hold over the work session on House Bill 2586 until Friday. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2586. Opening a work session on House Bill 2944. We do not have our fiscal ready to move House Bill 2944, so I'm holding that over until Friday. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2944. Opening a work session on House Bill 2012. We don't have a fiscal on House Bill 2012, so I am holding over the work session on House Bill 2012 until Friday. Closing the work session on House Bill 2012. Okay, now let's see where we are. Did I hit everything except for...
To my count, Chair Gelser, we have 2508 and 2557, which we have not opened.
Great. Yet. Then I've done my job. Okay. So I'd like to open a work session on which one will take the most time, Representative Denbrough?
Well, do we have a fiscal and 2508?
Well, we have amendments on both so that we can discuss this.
Well, probably 2557 will take a little longer.
Okay, so I will open a work session on House Bill 2508. Representative Denbrough, and colleagues, there are amendments in our packets. Representative Denbrough, do you want to update us on what has happened since we last met on House Bill 2508?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. We have a dash one amendment. And I think Rob Wagner, if he could come forward, I think he can enlighten us about it. This was developed after the public session, the public hearing that we had.
This was the bill where we learned about graduate student fees, and we also learned the lesson of the happy cat.
Happy cat. Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, Rob Wagner with the American Federation of Teachers, and with me today are Dennis Dugan and John Osborne from the Coalition of Graduate Employees at Oregon State University. I can either, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I can speak to the amendment or have a conversation about this. Just a little bit of context to remind people, we did an hour and a half of testimony with members from Oregon State University and University of Oregon talking about the issue around graduate research fees. And the language that was initially proposed was pretty clunky coming out of LC. And so to try to drill in on what we were really talking about here, we're looking at programmatic resource fees for people who are employed by their universities and the terms that they're employed, and following a similar course of action to what we're seeing with undergraduates, which is looking at rolling in programmatic resource fees with tuition. So this language, we feel, reflects that. We know that there's a fiscal and that we'll need to have a conversation in Ways and Means, but we really, truly appreciate the opportunity to come back with this language and continue the conversation in that process.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if you wanted our members to answer any technical questions or share any of their observations about this as well.
If members have questions, my intention with this bill, I think we won't be able to fully finish considering it until we have the fiscal in front of us, which is what we're waiting to hear. It sounds like the. Do you all remember this bill when we heard it before? Are there any questions for the panel? Representative Thatcher.
Just a brief question. Something that's just kind of stuck in my mind is would the fiscal that would be resulting from this bill, would that, I guess, just be pushed on to other students?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, certainly wouldn't be our intention. So what we'd like to see is that we fund universities and that we're able to account for the cost of being able to provide well-rounded education in our public institutions. So I don't know another way to answer that question, really.
Any further questions for the panel? Representative Kahn?
Well, it's not really a question, but I mean, my experience, and I don't know if they still do it, but a tremendous amount of private institutions, Lewis and Clark, Linfield, all those, this is something that they offer to their professional staff and have for a long time. And as, you know, commitment to the university and the system and the belief for themselves and their families. And so, anyway, it's just a thought.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Harkening back to when we heard more about this bill, I'm pretty sure that I asked the question of what this was going to cost the universities and how this was going to work out. And there was the, I think, Associate VP from Oregon State was here and said, yes, there, you know, somebody's got to pay the bill. I understand the situation that the students perceive themselves to be in, and you know, from the web searching I was doing at the time, mm-hmm. seems they're right. Not everything is visible coming in here in advance. Not everything that's going to be expected to be paid is visible. So I empathize, but I'm really concerned about the funding for the universities and us pulling just even a little bit of the rug out from under them on this. So maybe this is for Ways and Means to figure out, but I'll send it over there if that's what we're deciding to do, but I'm very concerned about the ding that they're going to take.
Representative Roblin?
Yeah, I was wanting to make sure, and my colleague to the
to the left.
Gracious in pointing out that it does have that last little line about teachers and employees of the institution, so it does relate to the relating clause. Mm-hmm. But it also excludes people who would have only got a tuition waiver, correct? That aren't really teachers or whatever, they were a student. It would only include those that were actually going to be student teachers or fellows. That would not include a person who was just receiving a tuition waiver.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Roland, that is my belief, but I'd let John Osborne from Coalition of Graduate Employees answer that question as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Roland, I think that...
And could you introduce yourself for the record, please? Thank you.
John Osborne, President of the Coalition of Graduate Employees at Oregon State University, and I'm also a research assistant in oceanography. Traditionally, I believe that at Oregon State, that most people who are receiving a tuition waiver, those who are receiving a tuition waiver are traditionally not employees or not in some way working for the university, that they are, it could be almost considered like a different kind of scholarship, a scholarship by a different name.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
That's what I would have agreed.
Thank you.
Okay.
I wonder if we could go ahead and adopt the -1 amendment today, because if we did move the bill, it would be in that form. I would accept a motion to that.
Madam Chair, I would move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2508, dated April 17th, 2009.
Representative Dembro moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2508, dated 4/17/09. Is there any objection? Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And Representative Roblin.
Did we get a memo that said if it was going to Ways and Means and the only thing it was waiting for was the fiscal, that they could make that decision? I mean, I think we have agreed that the philosophy is something we approve of. We have concerns about the money, and that's Ways and Means issue. But did we say that if we wanted to suspend the rules, we could do that and move it? Would you rather just wait? I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
We have had a memo that says that we can do that. We have not yet suspended the rules in the committee, and my intention, I think that we're going to have a slew of them with which we may have to suspend the rules as we get to Friday and Monday. And if it's acceptable, I'd like to wait till Friday before we start suspending rules. Representative Maurer?
No, that's fine.
Unless everyone would rather suspend the rules today. I don't want to stand in the way.
Up to you. I'm good waiting.
I'd like to see the fiscal.
You'd like to? Okay. Yeah. Any further discussion? No. All right. Seeing none, I am.
Madam Chair, it's your committee and it's fine.
But I want you to be happy.
That's a tall order.
You're asking a lot. He's far to the left of me and I'm taking a lot.
Such a happy kid.
Yeah. All right. This discussion's gone on long enough. I'm going to hold over the work session on House Bill 2508 until Friday. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2508 and open a work session on House Bill 2557. Colleagues, we don't have a fiscal back on this bill for our consideration today. However, Representative Dembro and I believe Representative Huffman as well have done varying degrees of work on this bill since last we saw it. And there are amendments in our packet, and maybe the two of you, if you would be so kind, walk us through that process and what you are recommending for our consideration today.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So in your packet, you have a Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 2557. And the Dash 4 amendment is the result of a lot of work that Representative Huffman and I have been doing. I guess I've been doing most of the heavy lifting, and Representative Huffman has been my reality check throughout this process.
He's been way too kind, Madam Chair. I've done very little.
We've worked at length with a variety of stakeholders, including representatives of the OUS and community colleges. And I think we have come up with, I won't say I think, I know that we have come up with a version of House Bill 2557 that will meet, a couple of our core goals, probably the most fundamental of them, to get access to health insurance to part-time faculty who are working significant amounts at one or more different community colleges or higher ed schools without it placing an undue burden on the colleges or the universities, because, needless to say, everyone's under a lot of strain these days. And so what you'll see in Section 2 of the amendment is the core piece that relates to health care. And what it does is it gives part-timers who are working at the PERS level. You know, the original bill talked about faculty teaching 50% or more. And that became a little problematic as to how to track the people who were working at multiple institutions, combining their work and reaching that level. But we realized that the PERS system is already doing this because people who teach more than 50% at one or more schools are eligible for PERS benefits. The PERS is tracking them. That information is going into PERS. And so it made sense to make PERS eligibility the trigger, and then that information would then be passed on to PEB or OEB, depending on where they were teaching, and they would then be eligible for benefits on a self-pay basis. They could, if the institutions wanted to, or through collective bargaining, have those premiums subsidized by the schools, but that would, of course, be up to the schools and collective bargaining. So this seemed to be a win-win kind of situation. We've been talking a lot with people from PEB and OEB, as well as PERS, and this seems like it would be manageable. There are a couple of just small implementation pieces that may need to be spelled out, probably will need to be spelled out on the Senate side, just to clarify the intent here. The intent being that, where it says here that the part-time faculty are eligible for the same health care benefits as full-time faculty, it may be, OEB has a whole variety of plans, and some of them are more affordable than others. They have high deductibles would be of more interest to part-timers. Whereas the regular plans, the institution or the bargaining unit may not have chosen one of those lower cost plans, and so it would really be out of the price range of the part-timers to be able to afford them. So that's something that we may want to spell out, and also to clarify that the flow of information will go from PERS to PEB or OEB and then to the individual faculty member. So, Lisa from OUS and John from the community colleges are here if you want to speak to it. This has been quite a process.
Representative Robles?
Yeah, I just want to ask Representative Denbrough. Now, this only applies to PEB, which would be the higher ed, and OEB, but there are some community colleges that aren't in either of those. So it would not affect them, or would they just... is that how it's written, to just those that use those systems?
I think our thinking is, and this is something that will have to be worked out in rule, but that the individuals could still apply for, on a self-pay basis, to OEB, to get a plan under OEB. I think the implementation of this is going to be that OEB is going to create a kind of part-time faculty local, right, that can collect people who are eligible from, under this bill.
So even if they didn't work with an institution that was a part of that, that's the entry they would have?
Right.
Okay.
So, welcome. What are your thoughts on this amendment?
Oh, go ahead.
Sure. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association, and I want to just first thank Representative Denbrough and Representative Huffman for working with us to make this something that would meet needs of an employee group that in some cases it does not currently have access to health care benefits, and to do it in a way that wouldn't create excessive burdens to the colleges at a time where we aren't adding a lot of money to budgets, to put it lightly. But really, really want to express our appreciation for the process that we've gone through. It's been very collaborative, and it's made it so that we've been able to come up with a product that I think that will work and won't create burdens at a time that it would be very difficult to do so. The areas that we want to address in the Senate were issues that were important to the colleges, and Representative Denbrough outlined them very well. So, but just to touch on one of them, we did want to make it explicit that for a number of reasons that the relationship really would be from OLEB in this case to the faculty member. There are a number of reasons for that, but one of which being, you know, you have colleges will have different will have chosen different array of the OLEB plans that they have, so they'll have different offerings. There will be different collective bargaining agreements at each college. There are a number of issues where it would require, if you put that responsibility at the college level, a lot of coordination between colleges and trying to figure out what employees are working at which institutions. We wouldn't necessarily have access to the information we would need with PERS without compelling them to give it to us, and sort of to take all of those issues off the table and make it run smoothly and not create sort of an excessive administrative burden, we felt. We wanted to make it as clear as possible that it was PERS notifying, in our case OLEB, who notifies the employee, and then the employee can go forward and would have access to those benefits. And so we're very confident that that's something that can be worked out on the other side. As I say, this has been a good collaborative process, and we really appreciate the work that's gone into it and the collaboration, and expect that we can do so in the Senate, come up with good product. And it's almost there. It's very close. It is a good product now, but we just want it to be a bit more explicit.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Panero. I'm with the Oregon University System, and I, too, would like to thank Representative Denbro and Representative Huffman for working with us to address our concerns on the bill. It was collaborative. I won't echo a whole lot of what John has already said. I am here today just to let you know that, yes, there are a few issues that remain that we want to be continuing to work with Representative Huffman to address as the bill gets over to the Senate side. Those primarily are how to implement it, how to administer it. They're not inconsequential, but we stand ready to continue to work with him. Some areas that are we just have not quite drilled down far enough to know how we would implement them. John's cited a few of those in interest of your time and attention. I certainly won't repeat those. So I would be happy to answer any questions if you have any of me.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions in this panel? Thank you. And thank you, Representative Huffman and Representative Denbro and all the others that were part of this work. Representative Huffman.
Well, there were no questions, so I probably don't need to say this. And again, it was Representative Denbro that did 99.37% of the work. I was a sounding board. This is as you get into the work group and start discussing it, it's a very complicated issue. Community colleges are fairly independent. Then you've got the OUS system, and you've got some adjuncts and freeway flyers that work in amongst all of it, and it's to come up with a benefit. But one of the things that I said in the first work group was what I heard most consistently with the adjuncts was if we could at least have access. And so that was one of the primary goals. It is a shame that we can't step up to the plate and offer something a little more like some of the professors that are in a single place getting some benefits. These others probably deserve some equity there, but it's just you can't get there.
Well, can we go ahead today and move the -4 amendment so it's ready for us when we get the fiscal? Representative Denbro, would you like
Thank
to make
you,
that motion?
Yes. I would move House Bill 2557, the -4 amendment, which is dated 4/20/09.
Representative Denbro moves the -4 amendment to House Bill 2557. Is there any discussion?
Just briefly. I was going to be a no on the original bill, and I think this is a greatly improved version, and I will support it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thatcher. Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none. The amendment is adopted, and we will hold over House Bill 2557 work session until Friday. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2557. And colleagues, on Friday, if you want to go ahead and look through the list, which is now really long for Friday, I think that by Friday, if we don't have fiscals, it will be time to start suspending the rules. And rather than putting anyone on the spot about any of those, if you could just kind of let me know about bills that you would have issues with suspending the rules for, then I won't ask you to suspend them in the committee. Is that doable for everybody?
Okay.
And why don't we go ahead, Kevin, if we have an extra meeting on Tuesday, what time would that meeting be?
I will. Don't look at me. Don't no slapping today. I'm going to need to check with the office or with the speaker's office to see if and when there are actually going to be meetings scheduled on Tuesday.
All right. My understanding, and I'd heard from the speaker's office today, that if we need it, we will be given an extra meeting time on Tuesday. Given the number of fiscals that we're waiting for, I would be very disappointed to see good education bills die because our last meeting day is Monday instead of Tuesday. I'll get into, or Kevin, can you let us know when that time would be?
Provided, yes, I will advise everyone.
And then just plan to hold that time open on Tuesday in the event we need it. If we don't need it, we will not use it. Anything else for the good of the order? Kevin?
Just an administrative issue, just to let everyone know that Friday's meeting, because there is no floor session, will be beginning at 12 o'clock. Just a heads up to remind you that that is scheduled to take place. There is no floor session scheduled for Friday, and so the speakers enabled the committees that start at 1 o'clock to begin at noon to address, obviously, we've got an abundance of bills to address those as well. So that's just a reminder.
And if you're in a class, when it started early, is let them go till 12, so you don't have to worry about lunch.
I think that the good news about that is that if we don't have the fiscals back, we'll be out very early. And if we do have the fiscals back, that may obliterate the need for a Tuesday meeting. So I'll see you Friday at noon. Representative Harker.
Some of us have conflicts at noon. Is there any way for you to determine in advance if we're not going to need the full 3 hours and perhaps not start this at noon?
There is not any way for us to know that, and we're now at this point already posted for noon. So that the speaker rearranged the schedule, so all of the early morning meetings were going until later, and the 1 o'clock meetings are starting at noon. And I think the noon time was posted earlier this week. And there's no floor session, which is the speaker canceled floor to enable us to have the 1 o'clock meeting.
All right, we'll work it out. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. And anything else for the good of the order?
Committee
nope, House Committee on Education is adjourned.
The freshman.